Our next talk is Estimating Crop Water Needs and Agronomic Benefits of Drainage Water Reuse and Sub-Irrigation in the Red River Valley of Minnesota. And presenting will be Yaba Kiyaskard.
Very good. Yeah, thanks very much, Diane. Yes, my name is Yaba Kiyaskard. First name a bit unusual there. It's a lot like Flintstones, Yaba Dabadoo. That's one way to remember it. I want to recognize my co-author for this study, Chris Hay, with the Iowa Soybean Association there. And so the title is Estimating Crop Water Needs. It really should be Net Irrigation Water Requirements in the Red River Valley of Minnesota. And it's we have in Minnesota about 20 million acres in crop production. And of those, about a third, about 7 million acres, have subsurface drainage systems installed in them. And even though Minnesota is a wet state, certainly compared to where we are now here in Arizona, those tile systems, they are installed to drain excess moisture, which typically is present in the spring. But we are observing some more variation and variability in the climate. And so as the growing season progresses, it's not uncommon to run into drier conditions later on. And so a question that often comes up is, well, what if we somehow were able to capture some of that drainage water? Rather than just sending it off its merry way downstream, could we somehow capture that water and reuse it later in the growing season? And so that's really the premise of this study, that we then could use this water either from either subsurface drainage or surface runoff for irrigation or sub-irrigation. And not only would we be reusing that water, but we would also reuse some of those nutrients that would be part that is being exported from the fields through the subsurface drainage systems primarily. There are a couple of different ways that systems like that could take place. One would be to have the water being drained by the drainage system. Simple enough, I don't have to point. Draining the water during times of the year where we need to drain, store that water, and then use it for irrigation, either as just an overhead sprinkler irrigation system, such as the pivot right there, or in case we don't have an overhead irrigation system, well, we could reverse irrigate or sub-irrigate with that water by simply pumping the water back into the tiles or the subsurface drainage systems during later parts of the year. One area of the state of Minnesota that this is of particular interest is up in the northwestern part of the state, as well as in eastern North Dakota. There's an outline of the state of Minnesota right there. I hope you can see it. It's kind of sitting on top of that elevation map there. Up in the northwestern part of the state, we have the Red River Valley. That is also the part of the state that receives the least amount of rainfall. Typically about 20 to 22 inches a year. It is a highly productive ground. It's flat, it's old lake bottom, silt loam soils, and typically it is water availability that is the limiting factor for crop yield up in that area. And so to try to come up with an estimate, a simple estimation of what that net irrigation water requirements would be, we went in and identified three sites with weather stations that has a record of daily weather data for 15 years up and down the valley there. And so this is an outline of the state of Minnesota, and then the three weather station locations. They're all managed by the North Dakota Ag Weather Network. And again, they all had at least 15 years of data. We utilized data from 2002 through 2016, so this year. The analysis is for just the growing season from early May to the end of September, which is the growing season in that area. In addition to those, we did install a drainage or hydrology demonstration site. It was on a privately owned field in the southern part of the Red River Valley, full quarter, 660 acres. And then last fall, we did install various levels of drainage systems in that field. So the northern third there, we left without any subsurface drainage. The middle third, We have a conventional drainage system indicated by those red lines being the laterals where we are not managing the water. And then there's the southern third, which we divided into four zones. Each zone is then we placed a water control structure at the outlet so we can adjust the outlet elevation and hold water back in those each of those zones during the year. And so if and we could use those for sub-irrigation as well, so pump any drainage water back into the into those zones. And because we have four of them, although they are a little, one of them is a little irregular in shape because there is an old homestead, we can make some experiments based on that. Now this was just installed this past year, so we do not have any data from that yet, but we hope that will come in a couple of years. So back to the issue at hand, estimating the net irrigation water requirement, we used a fairly straightforward, a simple way. We wanted to not rely on having needing information about the soil and soil texture. So we estimated that NIWAR, or net irrigation water requirement, simply as the potential ET, and we use the actual corn ET as a proxy for that potential ET, and then subtract the effects of precipitation from that. Crop ET we estimated using the alfalfa-based reference ET, Penman-Monteith equation, and as a crop coefficient, we used the crop coefficient for corn that was published in ASC Manual 70 that was published just less than a year ago. For the effect of precipitation can be a little harder to get at, especially since in this case we did not want, or we wanted to avoid needing information about the soil. So we divided it into two components. One is the runoff, which we estimated using just a curve number method, and then the soil storage using the USDA publication from 1970. The surface runoff was estimated on a daily basis, and then the data was aggregated to monthly estimates, and then that soil storage was estimated on a monthly basis. That was how that was developed. Before calculating that reference ET, we did undertake what I think is a fairly rigorous quality control of the weather data that went into calculating the reference ET, just to make sure that we do have good data. And one example is shown here where the solar radiation is shown as a function of the day of the year. This is for 2002, I believe, just as an example. There's the black line, that is the theoretical clear sky solar radiation curve. So that is if for days with no cloud cover, that is the amount of solar radiation we would expect. The green dots, that is the observed solar radiation each day. And so for days with no cloud cover, we would anticipate that the observed value should be very close to that theoretical curve. And we can see that certainly is the case, that there are many days that we had cloud cover, but the days without cloud cover, yeah, they do, they are within a couple percent anyway of that theoretical curve. In similar fashion, we were looking at the air humidity, and in this case as a relative humidity as a function of the day of the year. Here's graphed the maximum and minimum daily relative humidity. This is a fairly humid area, so we would expect that maximum relative humidity, which occurs in the wee morning hours, to be between 90 to 100% several days, certainly at very close to 100%. And we can see that is the case. The minimum relative humidity has quite a bit more variation, of course, but because of this type of analysis, we have pretty good confidence that our weather data going into this analysis was good. Then on to results. The monthly corn ET, this is the shown in a box and whisker plot, again by month for that 15-year period. Not too surprising if for this area that the highest, the month with highest ET is July at about 180. That higher ET rates do extend into August, but as the crop develops in the second half, or as the crop develops, the ET rates fall off in the second half of August there. Rather than looking at a monthly basis, we also looked at it at an annual aggregate for each of the 15-year period that we were looking at. And there's quite a bit of variation. Again, this is for the growing season, early May through end of September. Quite a bit of variation, of course, but we're in the sort of the 500 to 575 millimeter range each year. So that's in the 20, 22 inches. And again, recall that the average annual rainfall in this area is 22 inches. Looking at the effects of precipitation, not as much variation, more variation, but less absolute numbers. Again, this is the effect of precipitation by month for that 15-year period. The month where we have the highest is in June, but typically we see median values there between 50 and 80. And graphing that out, the effect of precipitation over the growing season, it's quite a bit of variation there, of course, but we'll notice the value we have between maybe 250 to 350. That range is the effect of precipitation we have during the growing season there. With that, we can then calculate that net irrigation water requirement as you just described. And so we come up with this when we look at by month, not too surprising. July is the month where we have the highest irrigation requirement, pushing 130 millimeters, but certainly other months are quite high and certainly not negative. Over the growing season, well, if anyone did the math already, this is what it looks like. So we are between 200 to maybe 350 millimeters in that net irrigation water requirement would be. If we were, as I mentioned initially, that we were looking at three locations up and down that Red River Valley, and they are separated by about 180, maybe 200 miles north to south. And just because of that separation, we see a little bit of a gradient in that net irrigation water requirement from low in the north, high in the south, just because the atmospheric evaporative demand is lower up in the northern part there. But some pretty fairly large numbers. But the real question that we were seeking to answer is, well, since now we have those net irrigation water requirements, well, how does the actual flow in the subsurface drainage systems compare to that? Unfortunately, we do not have a record for that entire 15-year period, but what we do have is two sites where we have a few years of data, not a whole lot, but a few at least. That's there. And that's shown here where the net irrigation water requirement is the blue line, the red 3 points, if you will, is from a monitoring site in the southern part of the valley, and the gray is in the, sort of towards the middle part of the valley. And so there certainly is still quite a bit of separation between the amount of water that we're draining from the fields, and that water would not fully, if we're able to capture that water and use it for irrigation, that would not fully cover that the gap up to the net irrigation water requirement. But there are a couple of other things to consider as well. Of course, the primary one is that we are not, in this analysis, we did not consider the difference in soil moisture content. And so it's likely that we've seen that in most cases, of course, we're going into the growing season with at field capacity, and maybe in some cases a little higher, and at the end of the growing season, we certainly have quite a bit less soil moisture at that time. And so part of that differential in the soils we're working with, we're probably talking 100, 125 millimeter of water just from soil moisture alone. That helps close that gap, in addition to any surface runoff we have. That if we were able to capture both the subsurface and surface runoff, we believe that we will be pretty close to actually satisfying the crop water needs in most years. And so with that, just a couple of concluding remarks, that certainly the crop consumptive use, it did exceed the rainfall during the growing season, and that it seems that water that we're draining through the subsurface drainage system may help, but not fully cover or meet those crop water needs. But if we could capture the surface runoff, that would provide additional water for that crop. Just want to recognize some of the project partners. It's a nice collaboration of a nice suite of collaborators, both state and federal agencies, private industry, local units of government, and of course the collaborating landowners. We couldn't have done it without this. This is just a very small part of this project, but certainly an important part that answers a lot of the questions that many landowners in that area have. And so with that, I'll take questions.
Thank you.
So the questions were, if we calculate the water use efficiency, was the one, we have not done that yet. This is still in the early stages of the project. The other question was, yield increases. Yeah, great question. That's the next part of this analysis, and the idea is to kind of have a two-pronged approach, if you will. One is that we have our field site where we can actually measure it in the field, and then the intent is to use a crop simulation model as well to get at that, because that's really where the rubber hits the road, that we could start talking about, well, does it pay? What are the economic implications for doing this? Because of course, if we are going through the effort of modifying subsurface drainage systems, establishing water retention structures of ponds, there's a cost associated with that, and of course that cost will have to be recovered one way or another, and that would be through an increase in crop yield. And so that is the next step in the study. So great questions. Thanks, appreciate it. So the question is, if we're going to use a sub-irrigation system, I assume you're meaning a thing of a drip tape type system, or...
No, I meant the control drainage when you raise the water table above the
object. So I'm not sure, would you mind repeating the question?
Using the subsurface drainage system to raise the water level.
Yeah, so the question is if we're going to use the control structures to raise the water level. So we're in what's called a control drainage mode. That is part of the intent as well, yes. So that would be a combination of control drainage and using supplementary irrigation water. Yeah, great question.